The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And we're back here on Analyze This. Some programming notes before I get back into my history with Great Virgin Islanders and music and all that stuff. And then doing Henry going to be joining me and hopefully Hannibal O'Brien as well as we look forward to the next 2 weeks of what's going to be some high profile legal run-ins going on the mainland. Okay, tonight we got the PBS News Hour from 7 to 8, Washington Week. With the Atlantic from 8 to 8:30, in conversation with AARPVI from 8:30 to 9. Great performances, right? Discover Singapore's rising star, Chloe Chua, with host Scott Yu. Okay, that's from 9 to 10. And then next at the Kennedy Center from 10 to 11, follow along as Ben Folds invites jazz virtuoso Jacob Collier to join him to reimagine music. So we got Arts Friday on Channel 12 as well. Tonight from 9 to 11. Great performance from 9 and next at the Kennedy Center at 10, and then Alan Poor and Company from 11 to take us up to midnight. Okay? So the PBS News Hour at 7. Washington Week with the Atlantic at 8. In conversation with AARPVI at 8:30, and then we got the great performances at next at the Kennedy Center before Alan Poor and Company. Couple of things. I definitely want to thank Nicole Parsons for setting me up and hooking me up with the youth ensemble, with Deanne Parsons and Ethan Habdi and DJ Parsons, and herself as well, because, you know, she does a lot of good stuff for the Virgin Islands to continue to promote us. But the reason why I wanted to play that that Sonny Rollins joint is because it's us, you know what I'm saying? And for those of you who don't know, you know, you hear me talking about it all the time, and I got my good friend Dwayne Henry, and the line. Good morning, Counselor. How are you? Morning, Counselor. How are you?
Good morning, Senator James. I'm doing well.
Good.
How are you?
I had to YouTube. That's Sonny Rollins there. So I could hear that nice little that melody in the band.
Right.
Again, doing that Virgin Islands linkage, right? Because when you read about Sonny Rollins and you read his upbringing, they say he was born in New York City. The Virgin Islands parents and grew up in Harlem and Sugar Hill. You know what I'm saying? And
anytime I could
use anybody as a reference for that. You know, that's a classic example of what our fathers and grandfather and great grandfather them were dealing with from the late 1800s up until 60s, 70s, man. A long time.
Right.
Multi generational.
You know, I always said I'd like to do, and I know people like my cousin Richard Schrader and others have written some short books about the migration and things like that, but I'd like to see a comprehensive study done and maybe put into a book that, you know, because that was a great migration for us, similar to the Mississippi to Chicago, you know, and so to the North thing. There was a great migration for Virgin Islanders to New York right after the...
another migration, since you mentioned that folks who moved from the Delta up to the Great Lakes area, there was also a migration from Louisiana out west, right?
Yes. To California.
To California, in particular, Northern California.
Los Angeles in particular,
And Oakland. A lot of them, like Bill Russell, right? The great Bill Russell basketball player. I didn't know until some years ago that people originally came from Louisiana.
Whoa.
Out west, right?
Yeah, and then a lot of them.
Yeah, and then we had that here with Mr. Hicks. Otis Hicks came from...
He
came from Reston. He came from Reston, Louisiana, and he came down here. And I mean, when you talk to Gloria Joseph, right, who's arguably one of our greatest culinary, you know, geniuses, right? Mastering the red soup and all kind of soup, right?
Mm-hmm.
She will tell you that Dorothy Hicks, Mr. Hicks' wife, was one of her mentors, right? Because she taught home ec. She taught home ec at Central High School for donkey years.
For donkey years, yes. Yes, I remember Miss Hicks and Mr. Hicks. Mr. Hicks had that real strong Southern drawl going on.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And look, it ain't just the Southern drawl. It was deliberate, though. You know what I'm saying?
Very strong.
Very strong,
there was no
yes.
doubt where he was from.
And you know who I met? Last week, me and my mother, we were in Cassoulas. I meet Mr. Blakey.
Get out, Noel Blakey.
Noel Blakey, yeah. I met Mr. Blakey.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was,
and I was,
he was the assistant
principal. Remember, it was he, Willie King, Mr. Hicks.
Yeah, I'm Camp Brandy again.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Outer Grove. Outer Grove.
Yes, he was the dean. Yeah.
No. We had some great Virgin Islanders who were educators par excellence. Here.
Amazing.
Regina Williams.
Regina Williams.
The list goes on.
We grew up in a, and you know, not to, so I don't want the current flock of educators.
No, remember our classmates, them, Kurt Vialis and the world and all them.
But there was something special about them that back then, because most of them ain't had no HIPAA degree and thing, you know. My auntie Evelyn Williams was one of the first to get a master's degree around here. As a teacher, most of them and a lot of them never even had a degree.
I tell you,
at least not a bachelor's.
Jada,
they were excellent. As the old Tanita Mohan and them people, excellent teachers.
Jada Finch, Sheen.
Right?
Jada Finch Sheen.
Agatha Sargent.
Jada Finch Sheen sat me down on a
Root Beagles.
Legend Harrigan Beagles, right?
Yes.
But attorney Sheen, Jada Finch Sheen, told me, Neville, I want to talk to you about something. I like to bring up this story like once every 6 months or once a year on this show. And she said, Neville, I'm missing something. When we were growing up, our teacher then we had to have all this certification, this and certification, that. And look at what they did for us.
Thank you.
So don't get me wrong, right? I have no problem with degreed educators wanting to further themselves and for the education system to want them to be more exposed to everything, right? But if we get away from the fundamentals, right? Because we want to live in a world, because we're living in a world of specialization and certification and all that stuff, we are only hurting ourselves. We need to get our educators to be more focused, to get that scope broadened, because look at our leaders over the years. Our transitional years in the Virgin Islands was between the 60s and the 90s, right? Where our population tripled, self-government took over, where we elected our own governor, and all of those leaders, right? They were educated by folks who didn't have all this excessive certification.
And I say this as a lifelong public school student. When they were in school, they teach them in the private school, they had school HIPAA. They weren't even qualified. A lot of them weren't even qualified to teach in public schools.
Yeah, get closer to the phone, Nick. Again, sorry, a little trouble.
Yeah, a lot of the private schools back then, and they know it's changing now, but a lot of those teachers were not even qualified to teach in the public schools.
That's right.
And the private schools consistently outperformed the public schools.
Yeah, man. You're talking to example right there. Look.
Thank you. People, they had a whole heap of degree, I think, in St. Mary's and St. Dunstan's.
And St. Joseph, and St. Patrick, right?
And
Country Day and Good Hope, right?
And consistently outperformed
the first 4 years that St. Dunstan's participated in the quiz bowl. We were St. Croix champions.
Hold
first
that.
4 years. Yeah, they can hold that. You check now, we get beat up. We get beat up on them. We were like the Dallas Cowboys when they come to going to the Super Bowl. We couldn't get over the hump. You know what I'm saying? But we had some very, very good, and we probably still do, because we got Montessori and the other schools as well.
Right.
We had some very, very good college preparatory schools in the Virgin Islands. Why?
Absolutely.
Why? Because a lot of the children, them, at least 90% of them wanted to leave the Virgin Islands to go to the States to go to college.
There was a big thing about when I went to school.
Yeah.
Nobody didn't want
not realizing that CVI and UVI were holding their own against anybody at any time.
Absolutely. So
when I play that Sonny Rollins joint there, right, and you read that story.
Beautiful.
There's an article that I pulled up here in the New York Times from 2020, right? And it says Sonny Rollins is at peace, but he regrets trying to one-up Coltrane. So apparently he wanted to one-up a master. You don't one-up a master. You don't one-up a master. When you recognize a master, you just want to hang out with them. Don't try to one-up them, because when you do that, you could go crazy trying to do that. And there's a photo here, right? In this article, and it's on the New York Times article, right? I just want to add to know. You can look it up. There are a couple of photos. One of them is Rollins at age 14 in Harlem, right? Mm-hmm. And he got on a nice blazer, and he got his saxophone and all that stuff. But there's another photo, and I know Ronnie Russell would like this one, right? There's a photo of him at the New York Jazz Festival in 1957. And he got his saxophone, and playing the trumpet next to him is a man named Miles Davis.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
The great Miles Davis.
Matter of fact, we got cell phone now, so I just saved this image, and I'm gonna send it to your phone so you can see it. Because this is the type of thing, you know what I mean, that only validates us and what I keep talking about here. Ain't got nothing out there that we can't master, don't ya?
Absolutely. And for this little place.
You know what I'm saying? This little speck.
Right?
This speck.
And think about it.
Yeah.
Back in them days when we were doing big things in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, our population was like 50,000.
Yes, sir.
The whole thing.
The whole hog. the whole hog. Well, a matter of fact, it was 35, 40,000 in 1960. You know
hold that.
And here we are holding our own, and it's good. And Sonny is 93 years old, man. And he lives up here. Guess where he lives? Woodstock.
I know. He, in his early days, he used to live on the Lower East Side.
Yes, because one of his albums is The Bridge, right?
There you go.
And when you read his story, he spoke about years where he stopped playing to go to the, and he went to the bridge to practice and take his craft.
Across the bridge to Brooklyn.
You go on the bridge, and people want to know what he's doing up there playing music, and his thing was, I got to get better. He took year and a half, 2 year personal sabbaticals to go up on that bridge there and master his craft. And even Ronnie Russell.
15, 16 hours a day. Just playing.
And Ronnie Russell even texted me a little while ago when the young men, Ethan Habdi and DJ Parsons were playing Lady Bird, you know what I'm saying? So I'm glad that what we do reach. And we're going to talk about the arts, and then we're going to shift over we're going to start to take place next week and the week after with the oral arguments about presidential immunity. But I want to continue on this vein, Dwayne, because this migration, and I had this conversation with Malik Siku, right, that lasted anywhere from, you know, based on how you want to look at it, it could say 60 to 70 years, right? We had a migration where Virgin Islanders who, at that time, everything was about, remember, now it's a mentality you're not doing. Everything was about, I got to get to the States.
Yeah.
I got to get to the States. Right? And exposure is good. Nobody's denying that. But with a lot of them, it was about, I got to get to the States to make things better for my family back home.
That's really what it was about.
You know what I'm saying? And economic opportunity, education. And the list goes on and on. And then we find out that it wasn't just about making money. It was about spreading the mentality and the Pan-Africanism and the Hubert Harrisons of the world having that influence. Everybody talks about Marcus Garvey, right?
Mm-hmm.
But his mentor was a Virgin Islander.
Yeah, but not only that, the whole the whole thing of Back to Africa came from Edward Wilmer
Blyton. I didn't even get to he. You know what I'm saying? And he ended up actually moving to Liberia, man.
Actually, he was one of the founders of Liberia.
Wow. Wow.
He was preaching about Back to Africa. He actually went back to Africa.
Literally.
Over 100 years before, W.E.B. Du Bois and them there went back.
Wow. Wow.
And again, out of St. Thomas.
Again, Virgin Islands are showing conviction. And showing leadership. Now, on the other side of the country, the lightest dwarf story, right? I think that story needs to be told, you know. Because when you're talking about a Danish West Indian finding modern day San Francisco, that to me has maybe we might get to sit down and write that screenplay or no. Maybe one of us can get to do it. No,
that,
because wait.
Just as good as Hamilton or better.
Of course. Back then, right, San Francisco was referred to as Yerba Buena, right?
Uh-huh.
And at that time, the Mexico had a tremendous influence on what was going on in California, right?
Right. Well, they owned it.
They owned it, yeah. You know what I'm saying? But in his case, right, he actually had Mexican citizenship as well as American citizenship, you know?
Right.
And worked his way through New Orleans out to the West Coast. And when he died, there was a big thing about the family calling on the state of California to get them the money.
Wow.
And so to me, that story there. I know Hamilton big. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, I don't know if you're gonna ever get to Hamilton level. But that story there about lighter stuff, to me, needs to be told, because there's a lot that is not known that needs to be known, Dwayne Henry.
Right.
By the way, I want to make sure to say this right. A highly successful, enterprising businessman. He was a West Indian immigrant of African, Cuban, possibly Carib, Danish/Swedish and Jewish ancestry. Leidestorff became a United States citizen in New Orleans in 1834. He migrated to Alta California. Now we know about Baja California, right? But it's actually Alta California. Then under Mexican rule, settling in Yerba Buena, now San Francisco, a village of about 30 Mexican and European families.
Right.
And could you imagine a Virgin Islander again played an integral part in that, Dwayne Henry? Unbelievable.
Imagine.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
I said, by the time his state was auctioned off in 1856, because he died in 1848, it was worth more than $1,445,000, not including vast quantities of gold mined upon his land. Now, you know what $1.4 million in 1856 is today, Dwayne Henry? The word ain't million no more. That's B. You're going to start that word with a B.
Couple billion again.
Wow. We'll take a break when we come back. We'll talk about some legal runnings that are going to take place beginning next week, both surrounding the former president, because things are happening fast and furious. Be back right after this.
Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, we give you a chance to impress your friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists. You'll be the life of the party. or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
The Forum and the St. John's School of the Arts presents Sphinx Virtuosi, a dynamic and inspiring orchestra comprised of 18 accomplished Black and Latinx artists. Its members serve as cultural and diversity ambassadors for audiences and communities worldwide. Concerts are Friday, April 12th at 6 p.m. at the St. John's School of the Arts and Saturday, April 13th, 8 p.m. on St. Thomas at the Antilles School. This weekend is the premiere of a greater collaborative presented by the VI Lottery between all three islands with CMC Arts on St. Croix, the Forum and United Jazz Foundation on St. Thomas, and the St. John's School of the Arts. The Sphinx Orchestra performance is made possible with support from the VI Lottery, First Bank, and the Virgin Islands Special Presenter Initiative Program of the Mid-Atlantic Arts Foundation with support of the National Endowment for the Arts. For more information, www.theforumusvi.org or www.stjohnschoolofthearts.org.
And we're back here and analyze this, and we're reminiscing about a great, I got to do it here in Ireland, a great Virgin Islander born on St. Croix, William Leidestorf. Was born in 1810 on the island of St. Croix in the Danish West Indies to William Leidestorf, a white Danish merchant, and Anne-Marie Spark, a Creole woman. As his parents were not legally married, Leidestorf was considered illegitimate until July 18, 1837. 27 years later, when a Crucian court, and they said Crucian, they spell it the right way to do him, C-R-U-C-I-A-N. Not like the rum Crucian. A Crucian court formally recognized his birth, allowing him to inherit his father's property. Leidestorf was reportedly of Jewish descent from the community of Altona, Hamburg. It was part of the Danish Schleswig Holstein. Then across the river from what now part of today's port of Hamburg, Germany, right? He migrated to North America and later the Caribbean to further his career as a merchant. That's his father, Leidestorf Sr. Leidestorf's mother, Anne-Marie Sparks, was described in one account as a Carib Indian woman. She was believed to have had African and European ancestry. Her race was noted in a census report. Many people observed that what were called Carib people had skin of various hues that likely reflected mixed ancestry, ranging from dark brown to lighter shades of brown, resulting in a Virgin Islands Creole to which she may have belonged. Other sources said the mother, Marie Ann Spark, as she was also known, was a mixed-race woman of African and Spanish heritage, thought to be born in Cuba. And it goes on and on and on. So as an infant, Leidestorf was baptized as a Lutheran. I'm telling you, the Lutheran Church, Dwayne Henry, had a major influence in the Virgin Islands over the years, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't get the first part. Are you there?
No, I said the Lutheran Church, because Leidestorf was baptized as a Lutheran. The Lutheran Church had major influence back in the Danish days here, man. Tremendous.
It was the state church.
It was a state church. Okay, okay.
Yes. Yes, that's what and it know. Still is the state church of Denmark.
There you go, right? And they say he migrated to New Orleans, where he became a naturalized American citizen and a ship captain. So that's one thing I noticed about him, Tono, right? Mm-hmm. He traveled to New York to become the master of the schooner Julia Ann.
Oh.
That sailed from New York to Yerba Buena, later San Francisco, in Alta California, then part of Mexico in 1841. His route was via Panama, St. Croix, Brazil, Chile, the Sandwich Islands in Hawaii, Sitka in Alaska, on to California following the Pacific Ocean currents. Wow. Yeah. So he went around South America then?
Yeah.
Wow. And you know, they say the day when he passed, right, in 1856, 1848, he died of typhoid fever. after receiving Catholic last rites. On the day of his burial, the town was in mourning. Flags were at half mast. Business was suspended and schools were closed. His remains were interred near the front entrance of Mission Dolores the next day on May 19th. A native Crucian, a native Virgin Islander, was revered out in Northern California, Dwayne Henry.
Imagine
that. Wow. The Virgin Islands are getting me, son. This small little place, this little speck on the map, more than holding it on all over the place. And we need to be proud of our history and what we've contributed over the years. And I was telling them boy yesterday, Jamie Raskin, he and Clay Higgins had it out on the house floor Wednesday. He had to tell Clay Higgins, I keep talking about immigrant, but a majority of our founding fathers weren't even born here.
England,
and in our case, Nevis and St. Croix with Hamilton. I'm not gonna lie to you. These people are either uneducated, Dwayne, or some of the biggest hypocrites in the world, or both.
I go with both.
I mean, and to me, it looked like they don't read, man.
And they don't want to. They really don't, because when you try to offer new information to them, they reject it. They don't want to hear it.
And not only that, you know something about them, though?
They tell you you're woke.
That you got, but you know why you got to stay far from them, doing? Because a lot of them shameless, you know? Ain't got nothing you could tell them that could hurt their feelings, you know?
Nothing.
This shame box boss. That's our local slang. This shame box boss. Because they could just be humiliated on the house floor and it means nothing to them.
Right?
Means absolutely nothing
right
to them.
But look at Exhibit A, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Her behavior and her pronouncement. And she has never once come back and say, you know, I misspoke or not like that. You know, she doubled down.
I believe she was actually told by 45, the man himself, whenever you take a position, just leave it alone, even if you're wrong.
But it's got to be. And the sad thing is, from what I've seen, I don't know all the positions, but from the positions she's taken, I've seen 90% of them, she's wrong.
And it looks bad. It looks bad. But that lighter story, I think we need to sit down and figure out if we could do something. The nephew, Jordan Paul, he's a filmmaker, you know. So maybe I need to reach out to him and let him know, look, there's a story to be told, and maybe need to head up to LA. So I'll tell you, maybe need to head up to Frisco. And up to Sacramento and do some research. You might be onto something. That story there. People, and one thing about America that I gotta give them credit for, they like history, right? As relates to documentaries and films and all that stuff. So I gotta give America credit for that. And Wallace Williams, just let me know, a street is named after him in San Francisco.
Wow!
Telling you, man, this thing big.
Well, you know the Mission Dolores is the oldest intact building in San Francisco. You know?
Here it is.
That's the importance of that building, and to be buried there would be like akin to being buried in St. Patrick's Cathedral or Canterbury Cathedral.
When I head out to
Westminster Abbey, these places.
When I head out to California again to see the Warriors, I gotta go to Leicester Street. I just find it, don't know. I find it, Dwayne.
There you go,
Wallace Williams. Thank you very much. Leicester Street. Wow. So check this out. It's in between Sacramento Street and California Street.
Okay.
And they got a Wells Fargo Museum, right? On the backside of it. Wow. The Consulate General of Japan, they're over there. No, man, I go look for Leicester Street, man. I go call my nephew and tell him we're going to California to do the groundwork. For all I know, somebody somebody probably listening now and don't beat me to the punch already.
No, yeah, you don't. Hey, you don't got to worry about it, you know. The audience got you.
Yeah, but me ain't a problem. Me ain't a problem with that. I just want awards, like they're saying, rock to get the rightful proppers. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
I ain't got a problem with that. Anyway, check this out. A lot of things have been happening on the 45 front. There were four cases last year, right? The first one was in early April. That's the hush money trial with Alvin Bragg, right?
Right.
And then you had the June filing, which was the classified documents case. That's in Florida, right?
Right.
Then you had the January 6th case. That was early August. That's in Washington, D.C. And then in late August, you had the RICO case in Georgia with Fannie Willis, right? So you got Alvin Bragg, Jack Smith, Fannie Willis.
Right.
There were those who were thinking earlier this year that there's a possibility that none of those cases were going to come to trial before the election, because they already knew the game plan for 45 was to delay. And of course, his argument is this is election interference and all that stuff, which is ironic because he's literally charged in the January 6th trial with election interference, right?
Right.
As it relates to obstructing the certification of the 2020 presidential election. It looks like the hush money trial, Dwayne, is going to happen on Monday. He's made a lot of motions over the last 3 days, and he's being rejected by appellate courts in record time. Now, there was a discussion on CNN that night about will he be appealing to the Supreme Court, right? And there's a likelihood that he might try to do that maybe today, because he's looking to time it so that nothing happened on Monday. But you were the one who told us that less than 1% of the appeals to the Supreme Court are actually heard?
That's correct, yes.
And talk about, explain that, because we hear, I'm using this word, cert all the time. Yeah. Define to the public why legal analysts refer to that term as relates to the Supreme Court.
Okay, cert or certiorari is the Latin term. It means to certify or. When a case goes before any court, the clerk of the court generally says, they look at the complaint and say, okay, this is good. I'm going to accept it. That's a kind of cert on the local law. The complaint is proper, and they enter it into the records. Or the Supreme Court or appellate court levels, it means that when somebody appeals them, they don't just look at the, you know, it's not a complaint, it's really asking the court to review a court.
Get it closer to the phone, yeah. Breaking up.
Yeah, they look to see if they what they call errors. If the lower court assigned any error or any errors were assigned in the lower court, and then they certify that yes, there were these errors, and therefore we can hear the case.
That's what certiorari
is at the Supreme Court level, is looking to see if there is a reason why the Supreme Court should take this case.
So arguments like what Trump is making, Marchand's daughter working for this Democrat and them kind of thing.
that's
the reason why these appeals ain't going nowhere, because there's no error involved in that.
Right, those are not legal arguments.
That's
basically melee. Those are not legal arguments.
Yeah.
It's like, so she's working for them. So what does that mean legally?
Yeah,
and they're not providing any.
Additionally, what does her working for Democrats have to do with a jury hearing evidence on a particular trial? Absolutely nothing.
That's the exact point. There's no legal ramifications to her working for Democrats. I mean, if that's the case, then because she's a judge daughter, she's precluded from working for a whole swath of people. That's ridiculous.
And so that's the reason why I was curious as to why these appeals getting knocked down in an hour and a half and 45 minutes. Now we know why.
And it takes that long just to present the paper. But you know, because these appeals.
You're breaking up again there. You're breaking up again there, Justin.
On anywhere the minute they hear them.
Okay, good. Okay, so good. So,
I'm here.
Okay, good. So Monday, jury selection begins. What are we looking for from both perspectives, and the district attorney's side? What is he looking for in jurors?
He should be looking for an impartial juror, because if he thinks his case is strong enough, then he should be able to convince any reasonable man should be convicted. So generally, he's looking for impartial. But he don't mind if you get a couple of people that's anti-Trump, you know. And it's the same thing on the other side.
One of the things that he has said is, this is not a hush money case. This is a falsifying of records case.
That's correct. It is like a business records fraud case.
Business records fraud.
That's what it is.
So it's a fraud case. It's a fraud case, not a hush money case.
Because remember, Senator Edwards, it's already been proven from his case that even before that, providing hush money is not illegal.
You're talking about John Edwards, the U.S. Senator, who was running for president back in 2004.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, that did the same thing. He was acquitted on one, and then the rest was a hung jury.
Yeah.
Right. But there is no crime in any state to provide hush money to anybody. Unless you're doing it, there is one exception. That would be if you tried to buy a witness.
Yes, but check
an
this out.
An actual witness, and crime there is witness tampering.
And then another angle they're using is this was actually election interference. Mm-hmm. because he was buying silence about his activities, that if they became public before the election, it may have impacted the results.
Right, but Mr. Bragg doesn't really want to push that too much.
Yeah.
Because he didn't charge him with election law violation.
Yeah,
right. He didn't charge him with election law violation. So you don't really want to stress that. That would be something you might mention in the closing argument.
Yeah.
But in terms of not evidence during the trial, he's not going to put on any evidence alleging that, because he hasn't been charged with that.
The
whole idea is that when he filed his returns and stuff like that, he lied on them
But let me ask you this: when the charges were originally filed, legal analysts, in particular on the Trump side, were saying these charges are weak. But now, as we approach the trial, they are changing their tune and saying this man could get convicted.
Yes, because I think what it was originally was people. You know, just saying that, you know, because people are looking at it as they.
I'm gonna give you a classic example, and I want you to think about this during the break. Will Cain, right, who used to work at ESPN and then transitioned to Fox and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. He was one of them who was making the argument that the charges in the New York case are more bad bookkeeping, right?
Yeah.
So it was a bookkeeping thing more so than an actual felony, right? Or a criminal activity. Now, as we approach, a lot of them ain't making an argument anymore. So I want you to think about that, because something has happened over time that has them thinking, wait a minute, this thing is more deeper than we could have imagined. We'll take a break and be back right after this.
It's beautiful. It's powerful.
On Finding Your Roots, Alanis Morissette.
My family would often say, can you just stay still for 1 minute?
And Sierra.
I have a greater appreciation for American history and my history.
An ancestor stunt.
Can you imagine taking a boat over those falls?
What? And a family secret.
Your biological great-great-grandfather was white.
Oh, wow.
Tune in April 16th at 8 p.m. on WTJX-TV Channel 12.
stay updated with news, alerts, and other valuable information with WTJX Newsfeed. Listen to the latest news stories that matter with Marcelina Ventura Douglas. Weekdays at 5 p.m. on WTJX 93.1, WTJX Newsfeed, your source for stories that matter.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Ah, sometimes you need a moment to just step back, relax, and listen to your favorite song. I'm Raina Duris, and on the next World Cafe, maybe I can help you find something new to love, or maybe remind you of something you've been missing. There's so much music out there to enjoy, so take a moment, take a breath, and tune in to World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
There are many complex issues that arise in our territory.
Comes with the Territory with Leslie Comision.
Join me, Leslie Comision, for a breakdown of political issues facing our territory, one conversation at a time. I'm here to be the voice you can rely on for information that is straightforward and comprehensive. Tune in to be a part of the discussion. It all comes with the Territory.
Comes with the Territory airs Sundays at 1 p.m. and re-airs at 7 p.m. on WTJX-TV, Channel 12.
Back here analyzing a high-profile case that's taking place beginning on Monday, jury selection in the hush money falsifying business records case in New York against Donald Trump. And we were talking with Dwayne prior to the break about what was originally perceived as quote-unquote a weak case, a bookkeeping case, is now looking even more stronger as we get closer to the actual trial. One of the things they said here on Yahoo News, misplaced criticism of Bragg's case coalesces around two areas of supposed weakness. Legal arguments that the case should be removed or that it's preempted by federal law, and weak evidence in the form of witnesses, former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. Dwayne, good morning once again. Glad to have you on. Cohen was a witness in the New York State civil case, and Judge Engoron found him to be credible, right? Even though obviously he went to jail and all that stuff. But isn't there a counter argument that this man paid the ultimate price for loyalty to the person that we are actually trying now? Look at it from that perspective.
Absolutely. You know, especially as an attorney, bad enough he lost his license, he actually went to jail. You know, for an attorney to go to jail for anything at all is probably the oxymoronic and the most ironic thing to happen, because we're sworn to uphold the laws, and here we are breaking them. So, you know, when an attorney goes to jail, it's a huge thing to me.
We found out yesterday that another one of his lawyers has actually stepped away, Corcoran, right? And Corcoran was the lawyer in the classified documents case that Jack Smith used, because he found out that Trump was asking him to lie to investigators, right? So in this case, attorney loyalty to their client, in the case of Evan Corcoran is his name, actually got him to the point where, what's the term that they use when they ask the judge to remove attorney-client privilege so that I could ask key questions? It's called an exemption, right? Attorney-client exemption?
Yes. Because it's a doctrine, and you ask an exception to the doctrine.
Acts for exception to the doctrine. And as a result of that,
it's very rare too.
Because Corcoran was taking notes and Jack Smith found out about this, and he asked the court, well, the court, if that's the case, that means that he has information that we need to make available to the public, or they need to make available to the prosecution, because he's aware of certain behaviors And that led to Joaquin Nauda, Carlos de Oliveira, and the one Julian Tavares, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of these players who worked for Trump to have to come before the court. This thing with in New York, though, there's something going on that we don't know about Dwayne Henry. Because if you're claiming I'm an innocent man and this is Joe Biden putting them up to this, wouldn't you want your case to go to trial?
You normally would. But
if you're innocent like you claim you are.
Exactly. Listen, people who want to win on technicalities, it's like I always say, you know, if I have a client, a criminal client, if he comes, he or she comes to me and they say, you know, I really didn't do this, right? But when they come to you, they say, what did they do tonight? But they tell you, well, the police didn't do this, and the police beat me up, and they went in. Those are all distractions, though. They're distractions from whether you did it or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And all those might be true, and all those we use in defenses, but it doesn't go to the guilt or innocence of the person. It just is a run around, you know, so you don't think about the guilt or innocence of the person. Can you thinking about all this other stuff? Police misconduct or prosecutor, whatever the case may be. That doesn't mean you didn't commit the crime.
Correct. So you basically convoluting.
Money in the water.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Your defense ain't based on wanting to present evidence to the contrary.
No.
Your defense is they only doing this because of something else.
Mm-hmm, right, which is misconduct.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, the following week, the week of the 22nd, that's an even bigger week. Because I know when it was announced, I believe it was on leap day itself, the February 29th, when the Supreme Court said, yes, we're going to take up this argument as it relates to immunity. And we're going to hear oral arguments April 22nd. So everybody get frustrated. So say the Supreme Court going along with this delay, pushing back date, all that stuff. That seemed like yesterday. Dwayne, 6-7 weeks done gone already, man.
Yeah.
And they taking up this argument on the 22nd. Isn't this arguably the most important case or important defense argument that Trump is making? Not as it relates to January 6th, but to all the cases, because if immunity is in play, then a lot of these trails gone up the river?
Absolutely. This is the case killer. If he gets this, everything gone, and that's why he's throwing all his marbles into it. If he gets this, everything is gone. You know, that's why we say, that's why, you know, it's an interlocutory appeal, as we had spoke about several occasions.
Yeah.
If you win an interlocutory appeal, generally that case is gone. Because those type of appeals normally goes to the heart of whether or not you should even be trying. Whether it's a double jeopardy claim or you know, a race to the kind of claim or whatever. These kind of appeal a suit, a lawsuit or a trial, you know, a case.
Now, on the flip side, if in fact he had immunity, that mean Biden could do what he want then.
That's why I tell you that I can't imagine the Supreme Court even ruling that, because the outcome would be absurd. And you can't have absurd outcomes from judicial rulings. You know, you can't say Dwayne Henry is exempt from filing his income taxes, because I mean, everybody would be exempt from filing income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the government won't have any money and the government can't function. You can't have that result.
That was like back in the day when people were so upset with WAPA. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, well, there's something. Tell all the people them don't pay the WAPA bill.
Right?
and then when you do that, then nobody would have power.
Thank you. You can't have that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So the Supreme Court know they're between a rock and a hard. What they're trying to do now is to see, they're probably looking out to see if there's any exemption at all.
Yeah, and can they not, are there certain areas that they could narrow their decision
right,
that doesn't impact or doesn't allow for a broad application of presidential immunity.
Exactly, exactly. And that's why the special prosecutor recently filed a brief saying that if you are going to carve out an exception, that, immunity, it has to be extremely limited in extremely limited cases.
Check this out. The January 6th trial is about what Trump did in his official capacity as president,
right.
or was this about what he was doing for the benefit of candidate Trump?
The second. That's what the special prosecutor is saying. The special counsel is saying, look, this guy, clearly, they think it could be established, not clearly, but it could probably be established that if he was acting in his official capacity, there's some sort of immunity. But he wasn't. He was acting as citizen Trump because he was acting as candidate Trump. Therefore, no immunity should apply. But if the court were to find that he was in his official capacity, that they would have to limit that immunity to say, well, the criminal conduct can't possibly be one of those exemptions.
So then this gets to the heart of where I want this discussion to go. Just because you were president at the time, it don't mean, or in my case, I was senator at the time, it don't mean that I am always acting in that official capacity.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why, like in your case, as you full well know, you have to be careful of what you say once you come off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Once you're down the floor, you could basically get away with murder. I mean, in terms of what you say, utterances on the floor of the legislature are immune from lawsuits. But when you walk out that building, then you put yourself, you could be slandering somebody or whatever. You could be in a committee meeting or a session and call Dwayne Henry a thief, and Dwayne Henry can't do nothing about it. But try that when you come out, and it's slander. So in that case, y'all's immunity was very limited, and it was limited to utterances on the floor. It wasn't a broad immunity that a senator could just say what he wanted about people.
Remember that congressman in Ohio, James Traficant?
Yes. He was a mess.
Yeah, and he was very demonstrative when he would talk and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And he got caught up in a racketeering case.
Right.
And he was convicted of 10 felony counts, including bribery, racketeering, and tax evasion,
mm-hmm.
On April 11th, 2002. All right? And he insisted uh-huh. that the trial was part of a vendetta against him, dating back to his 1983 trial. So it looked like he had a right. trial against him a couple decades before. Right?
Uh-huh.
And then on July 24th, the House voted to expel him. 420 members voting yes, one member voting no. That's probably he, right?
Of course.
9 members voting present, and 4 members voting not voting. I stand corrected. The sole vote against expulsion was Representative Gary Condit, who at the time was in the midst of a scandal of his own. And had been defeated in his re-election primary. So what's going on? What are you laughing?
These guys have no shame.
When I tell you, people shame box boss. That's a classic example here, right? Right?
Oh my God.
And yeah. The same thing going on now with Matt Gaetz. There was one person who voted against sex trafficking law and legislation, and it was Matt Gaetz.
Unbelievable.
The same person who right now is on that scandal, right? I mean, you can't make this. You can't, like they're saying in America, Dwayne Henry. You can't make this stuff up, man.
At all. This is insane.
Wow. Wow, the more things change, man, the more they remain the same. You know what I'm saying?
But you know, I think the court is gonna, like I tell you, that'd be very. You know what they gonna pull out the hat, the proverbial hat. What trick they gonna pull out? But they're really, you know, Trump really backed them up with this immunity claim, because he's literally asking them to do what is the definition of undemocratic.
Last night, I was on Twitter, and there are those who are convinced that if he don't get this trial delayed or in his favor, he might consider a plea, because they believe that these are typically misdemeanors and not felonies. Bragg's argument is that the reason why it's a felony because he was engaged in this activity to cover up another crime.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out over the next, this is about 6-8 week trial, thereabouts.
And
I'm curious as to if the judicial branch itself is actually tired of his shenanigans doing, Henry.
But they have to be. Could you imagine? You know, I could send you a thing. This professor from St. Mary's Law School in San Antonio.
In Texas.
Wrote a piece, wrote a piece, American jurisprudence since Trump.
What's the name of the piece?
American jurisprudence since Trump.
Oh, American jurisprudence since Trump. Yeah. And you know something?
But
look, and people writing book left and right. Andrew Weissman and this young lady, she's a professor at NYU. They wrote a book. Norm Eisen, he wrote a book, Trying Trump. I mean, America could make money off of people's scandal, yeah.
That's what they do. That's what they do.
It really is a capitalist.
Yeah, I know you got to go in a minute. Two quick things. The Bush T was...
And
let me tell you, it'll mash them up because you gotta get the oils to come out of the thing to real aroma. And I don't drink out of them old thing cup, you know.
Oh yeah, are you styling off?
With
your pinky finger out of the side.
And the other thing, I was looking up Lienersdorf, and they said in 2011 there was a celebration here at St. Croix about him.
In 2011?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta look that up.
Yeah, I'm gonna talk to my nephew
and tell you to look into that.
Okay.
And he and I could do a due diligence trip to Northern to Alta.
October 22nd, 2011.
Yeah, okay. Me and I could take a trip to Alta, California. Not Northern.
There you go.
Alta, California. Thank you very much, man. Appreciate it.
Take care, man. Have a good weekend.
And I want to thank Dion Parsons, Nicole Parsons, Ethan Hobdy, and DJ Parsons for joining me on Arch Friday earlier today. Great show to end the week. And Kyle Fleming knocked them out this afternoon, man. Proud of you. Be good. Enjoy the weekend.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
So I spent the past year trying to figure out what news designed for 21st century humans might look like. One of the things that really stuck with me was that we now know that humans actually need hope to get up in the morning. And I don't think as a journalist I ever thought about it that way.
We're always looking for new and better ways to understand the world we live in. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
As the news gets more complex and changes through the day, you need more than just a quick headline check. Here and Now keeps you connected to your world between Morning Edition and All Things Considered, as the news and the people shaping it are changing in real time. I'm Robin Young. Follow along on Here and Now, NPR News weekday afternoons.
From 2 to 4 on WTJX-FM, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.